Welcome back, guys, to your A-List Lowdown. Coming at you this week on a Sunday, July 27th, 2025. Another rainy Sunday in southern Alberta. And looks like rain all week. I mean, we're definitely reconstituting some of the ponds and that sort of stuff out here. And it's greener than it's been in a minute. I mean, it's got to be 10 years since it's been as green as it is now. Everything is green. And my Miss Hart on the allergies. It's like allergy season in full bloom with all this rain out here. You're pretty used to everything by now. Everything's pretty chill. Not this year. So we got grab bag of grievances, which I mean, I could throw some stuff in that grab bag.
Do you know where it's from?
I don't know where it's from. No.
It's been a bit. I mean, honestly, dude, there's a lot of stuff accumulating in my A-list folder.
I stay off X kind of just as a, like a personal rule now, except for when I'm doing work for the show or to go post some stuff for, but I just really try and stay away from the scrolling or reading anything because I mean, I got drugged in today where I'm sure I made a couple comments I didn't need to make or just like, you know, just
what? Can you talk about it?
I don't know. Let me check.
Cause I've been really disappointed on NX too recently with the convoy stuff and all the people like, I just feel like we're just in this polarized battle. And it's just never ending.
No, you know what it was? It's about, it was pushing back on, because now everyone's starting to get riled up about the Indians getting some veto power on shit going through their land. And I'm like, well, man, we got to figure out the Indian Act. That should be the push. It can't be just to say, fuck these people. I mean, it's just, which is the, you know, the direction I worry about it going at some point.
Yeah.
We got it. But as far as I'm concerned, we can agree on the fact that it's time to just figure that shit out right now. You know, how much does take the land that they're on now and maybe a little bit more and dole it out to the people directly.
Is that regarding that C5 bill that they were pushing back from in Ontario?
Yeah. I think there's a few instances of it now where they're upset because the Indian
government's moving too fast all of a sudden.
Part of the problem is that the duty to consult has been weak. I mean, this is my whole stance on why the Firearms Act is unconstitutional and Bill C-21 is unconstitutional. But the way it is, you know, it was just written as there was a duty to consult the Indians. There was no sort of duty to consent. And I don't think there still is yet, but it just seems to, it's just really, in my mind, it's solidifying that duty to consult to be possibly a little more meaningful than it has been. But like I say, my stance at the end of the day is that people should be in a room discussing how the Indian Act stops. What are the parameters? What needs to happen? I mean, it's going to be messy at first.
That's a pretty big initiative, though, that transcends boundaries that are way farther apart than the energy and resource extraction. All that's the problem. Yep.
It's too big to approach,
right? I mean, and it's just alarming to me when I see them saying, "Oh, the government's moving too
fast."
When has the government moved too fast? I mean, in Canada, especially.
The U.S. has done it, you know, somewhat successfully to a certain extent. So it's not like there's not a model to follow. You know,
it won't follow anything the U.S. does these days. I mean,
there's that. But I mean, that would just solve a lot of the problems. Then it wouldn't be like there's a bunch of people to deal with. It's like, okay, well, this pipeline goes through this one tribe and they own that land. So we just got to go talk to them and make a deal with them. You know, it's not about. At the end of the day, to me, that's what it boils down to is, I mean, it's not about vetoing. It's about companies that are fit to make billions of dollars shelling out some cash. And I mean, that's how we make them independent as well. That's how we get independence is by that income from that pipeline coming through, going directly to a BAM instead of through the government. And that only works without an Indian Act, as near as I can tell. I mean,
just hit the problem right in the head there. It's without the government. You just said the words without the government. That'll never happen in Canada. That's the problem.
And the other problem is no one's anything. So, I mean, to give the Indians some land that they actually own is a, is like setting a precedent against the whole Constitution of Canada. I mean, you can pretend you own land, but if you really read it, you know, they can basically come and you just kind of hold on to it for them for a while and they can sort of come take it back at any time. And that's been proven time and time and time again by eminent domain.
Well, this has kind of got to do with it. I mean, the EU has agreed to purchase $750 billion worth of energy from the U.S. This is from Kirk Lubomov. Let's remember that European countries came to Canada for energy deals, and Canada's Liberal government told them there was no business case and proceeded to reelect the same buffoons and Mark Carney who wants to carbon tax it all, making it uncompetitive. What a loss for Canada and a huge win for the U.S. Kind of interesting, eh? And here's just like, let's just play this too, just to top off like what you're talking about, energy extraction and the problem that Canada's facing.
It's Canada is not open to us. They need to open their market. Unless they're willing to open their market, they're going to pay a tariff. That's a simple message the president has. It's fair trade. It's reciprocal trade. Why should we have our country be wide open while theirs is closed? This is an 80-year wrong that President Trump is trying to fix. And our businesses are going to really, really enjoy it. I think the president's going to open between $300 and $400 billion of opportunity for Americans. That's 1.5%, up to 1.5% GDP growth, because the president's going to open all these markets up. Yeah. You saw it with Vietnam. You saw it with Indonesia. You're going to watch all these other countries decide if they want to do business with America. Let's just open our market up to America.
So Canada is not open to us. This is Mario Zelaya saying, Carney has a choice. End supply management and make groceries affordable for Canadians, or get mutilated with tariffs and make life expensive for Canadians. And then Made in Canada says the LPC, CPC, NDP bloc. That's basically everybody. Just all unanimously signed and passed a bill attempting to ensure nothing will touch or affect supply management. So there's no sitting government that imposes supply management. That's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point. Green Crow's like, why is Trump's Mossad handler getters involved in Canada's trade relations? Well, because he's the economic guy. But yeah, not that I, you know, trust Lutnick or anything like that. But I mean, it's a good point that we have been very restrictive. So
here's some
Internally and externally, right? We're restrictive among provinces even.
Here's a crackdown on that. In Canada, property rights are not explicitly protected in the Constitution, particularly not in the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. It does not include the right to own or enjoy private property, and this was a deliberate omission. Historical note, Section 7 protects life, liberty, and security of the person, but not property, despite the fact that many other liberal democracies include property rights. The original Bill of Rights under Diefenbaker included property rights, but the charter which supersedes it constitutionally does not carry this forward. The Constitution Act of 1867 allocates property and civil rights to the provinces under Section 92-13, property and civil rights to the provinces. That means provinces can regulate, limit, or expropriate property as long as it aligns with provincial legislation, subject only to administrative or procedural fairness, not a higher constitutional standard. Because there's no constitutional right to property, governments can expropriate private property without compensation as long as they pass legislation that allows it. In practice, compensation is provided, but is a legislative courtesy, not a constitutional requirement. Which we were just talking about the other day, because in Calgary, there's just been a ton of instances where the city just will take the houses in the end. And if you fight them, they'll pay you less than market value.
What do you mean they'll take the houses for what?
Well, if they're building a new freeway, a new interchange, a new railroad, I mean, that's right now. It could be like, hey, this is turning into a wilderness area. This is a protected space. So you got to get the fuck out of here. Bro. Sorry, I don't know what to tell you. You don't have to go. You can't stay here.
Speaking of the charter rights, did you see that Sean Fuchs? How do you pronounce that guy's name? That artist, that popular artist that got what?
Fuchs.
Fuchs? Is it really Fuchs?
I don't know.
No, come on.
I have that clip too. Which clip do you have?
Well, I don't have a clip because I do have a clip of him getting hit with a car, but
I have a clip.
Did you see he posted the Charter of Rights and he's like, what's going on, Canada? Everybody's like commenting on his post, like, dude, where have you been? Like, that's not really protecting us. It's not really what you think it is.
I think this is him, right?
Yeah, this is him, but with Lavoie, Alexi Lavoie or whatever her name is. And the CBC reporter's in here too, saying that, you need a permit for the church.
Let's play it.
Will you do the show tonight, sir?
Oh, of course. We're not Scotland.
Sure.
We don't back down for anything. Excellent. But I do want to say this. The police have been amazing. These guys are so kind and so hospitable, and they've just been amazing.
What did they say
all day
long? What did they say?
So we're really grateful. I mean, we're grateful that, you know, that they would show up, that they would warn us about how the anti-Christian bigotry is strong in this city. You know, I haven't done a lot of stuff in Montreal, but that's what they were warning me, that the attacks against Christians is a real thing. And I appreciate that. You know, I think that that's a really good thing to have police officers that are standing up for the freedom of worship. So I commend them.
But it's because you don't have a permit to have
a concert. I don't think you need a permit to worship in a church.
Can you close for a second? The CBC reporter is like, but it's because you don't have a permit.
Yeah. And he said, I don't think you need a permit to worship at a church.
You don't have to, because it's religious freedom, Radio Canada. It's religious freedom. You know that? Religious freedom. You don't need a permit to worship, Radio Canada.
Well, you have to research your laws on that.
My God, it's incredible. Worshiping research in Article 176 of the Criminal Code.
Thanks, guys.
Research that.
It's pretty funny that the American guy is... knows more about it than
that's why it was funny, because I was going right with what he posted here, because he says, let me get this right, Montreal. You canceled our permit for a peaceful outdoor worship gather, no reason, right? You threatened a church on private property to not have church. You send a battalion of police to intimidate us. Antifa throws two smoke bombs at my head inside the church. You do nothing. Now you want to fine the church for doing what the church does, worship. Every Canadian should be embarrassed, concerned with this. No bigger scandal in Canada. And then this is like, so he's a MAGA superstar, according to the CBC, right? Of course, or CTV, sorry. Montreal says it will fine church after MAGA superstar concert goes ahead without permit. And then there's a whole bunch of people going back and forth. Of course you need a permit. No, you don't need a permit. Yes, you do. No, you don't. Like, you can just have a church can have a person perform a musical performance in their church without a permit. It's super interesting how back and forth this is going. And then this is him. A car just rammed into our bus outside of Montreal. Let's just play a clip of him here.
Hey, guys, I'm here outside of Montreal, and we were just hit by a crazy car. It was out of control. It was swerving everywhere. I don't know if it was intentional. I don't know what, but it rammed into our bus, and we were all sleeping and felt it just bam our bus, and... So we pulled over. We got police coming. The car. I think everyone's safe. Everyone's okay. Man, this is wild. I don't remember the last time I've experienced warfare like this. And I would just ask for you guys to please pray.
Warfare.
Can you pray for us? Can you pray for our team? Can you pray for our bus? Can you pray for our truck? And police are here. They speak French. We speak English. So that's going to be fun. But we'll figure it out. And I'll come back to you guys soon. We're right outside of Montreal, but please be praying. We know.
So that is weird a little bit, right? I mean, what are the chances they get hit?
All right. Well, do you think these guys have a permit?
You know, here's Gator Gum, of course, right? Oh, and you want to call it warfare.
I stole your screen.
Oh, okay.
Do you think these guys have a permit?
Well, probably, yeah.
What's
they
that?
They probably do, yeah.
You think they do?
Oh, yeah, you got to get a permit to do something like that in the city. In the middle of the streets, yeah, you have to. You can't take up all the parking. But dude, you need a permit to pull a train up to the side of the thing and move a piece of steel inside. I mean,
I'm sure this is the protesters.
What?
The protesters wouldn't have got permits.
The protesters wouldn't have got permits. Yeah, if you're in the middle of the street and you're going to do an organized protest, you need a permit.
No, there's no way these guys. Who gets the permit?
What do you mean? Who get the organizer of the prayer? Like whoever's running the show there.
Or the protest organizer?
Yeah.
So do you think for all the freedom rallies, there was someone who was getting a permit?
Well, if you're doing a prayer in the middle of the street and you're shutting down the streets.
I don't think these guys would have a permit. I take the opposite stance. I think
okay. All right.
They do not have a permit and that
I mean, freedom ones, let me put it this way. They're not shutting down the streets like that. Even the convoy left the streets open, right? I mean, it's unbelievable. It's about freedom. You don't want to take away people's freedom, right?
You think the convoy got a permit?
No, but that's what I'm saying, right? I mean, they probably did when they're maybe not. Maybe not around the October. Maybe not around the permit.
I definitely don't think these guys got a permit. Which is what the reason I just heard that is that these guys are just like, cool, you know? But in Montreal, they're like, no. I don't think Montreal would know what to do with these people either because they're aggressive. They can get aggressive.
No, they know what to do. They just let them do what they need to do. They just don't bug them.
How come? Because it's safer?
Because it's two-tier lawfare right now in Canada. And the UK and the West, basically.
Oh, you can still come to Canada, Cody. It'll be fine.
Okay, here you go. If the protest involves blocking traffic, interfering with public access, or using amplified sound, that sounded pretty amplified.
There's no way they had a permit.
You may need to obtain a permit to meet other legal requirements. It's always a good idea to check with your local municipality. But in most cases, you do not need a permit to hold a peaceful protest.
I should open up a permit, protest permitting company. We'll sell them online. The A-list, this is an exit strategy, the A-list protest permit, 3333, and it's like, you're good to go. You can even have some mild violence. Nothing crazy. You can wreck.
You can just defend each other. You can offend each other.
You can wreck property, but not people. But no, that's if you want to wreck stuff, that's $99.99 a month. Anyway, what else you got? What should we go to? Where'd I go? Let's go to this one yet. I don't know. Have you seen this? This was Mark Nixon, but I think it's from Jordan Peterson, maybe. Have you seen this? The body language expert?
You're an expert in nonverbal communication. So,
Hang on a sec. Is this recently with Jordan and his blonde hair? He's gone and dyed his hair blonde or something. What's going on with him?
It looks kind of whitish on my screen still, but there is a tinge of something now that you mention it. I didn't notice it before, but there's like a tint of something.
All right, I guess he's changing.
It's just going to go slowly. Every couple weeks, he'll go a little blonder and then it'll be blonde and everybody'll be like, what happened?
Space as possible. You'll see people will turtle where they sink their head down and they tend to creep their shoulder. Exactly. They tend to creep their shoulders up.
Mr. President, welcome to Canada.
Thank you. Very much.
It's a great honor. Happy birthday. A few days short. A few days short, but didn't have a chance to see you on the day. Happy birthday to the U.S. military as well. 250th. And this is the 50th birthday, if you will, of the G7. This marks the 50th birthday of the G7. And the G7 is nothing without U.S. leadership. And so, and your personal leadership, leadership of the United States, many issues, geopolitics, economic, technology, and working hand in hand with the United States, Canada and the United States, and the other G7 partners with your leadership. I'm very much looking forward to meeting them.
Thank you very much, Mark. I appreciate it. And we've developed a very good relationship. And we're going to be talking about trade and many other things. And we have a whole group of people, some traders and some other people. I see my top economy people. But we have a very talented group of people, and you do too. And I know they work together very well. I look forward to that. The G7 used to be the G8. Barack Obama and a person named Trudeau didn't want to have Russia in. And I would say that that was a mistake, because I think you wouldn't have a war right now if you had Russia in. And you wouldn't have a war right now if Trump were president 4 years ago. But it didn't work out that way. But it used to be the G8, and now it's, I guess, what's that, 9 years ago, 8 years ago, it switched over. They they threw Russia out, which I claimed was a very big mistake, even though I wasn't in politics and I was very loud about it. It was a mistake in that you spend so much time talking about Russia and he's no longer at the table. So it makes life more complicated, but you wouldn't have had the war. Other than that, I think we're going to accomplish a lot, and I expect to. And I think our primary focus will be trade and trade with Canada.
It's kind of from the side, you know? I don't know if he's quite as hunched over as they're making it seem.
Yeah, poor guy's got to sit there and listen to Trump ramble on. I mean, geez, guys.
That's kind of remind you of Mr. Burns, right?
And like making faces. What? What?
He does kind of remind you of Mr. Burns, though, you know, in like 20 years. He's like running this energy company and he's evil.
Canada. And I'm sure we can work something out.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. So for coming and hosting and being here and for your leadership, we'd be nowhere without Germany and without you personally.
Thank you.
And this amazing team that you assembled.
Are they showing him differently now? Oh,
really true.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you go on plaisir.
Yeah, he does look different.
Yeah, on Albert's.
But to be honest, it could be because he was trying to stay. He was trying not to block the Kamaskis sign. So I think he was trying to stand away and lean forward. Like, I think you got to take that into account too. If you go back,
he was cucking to the sign.
Well, I mean, he's probably told, hey, there's a sign there. Like, you know.
Well, what do you want to go to next? Do you want to go to the my feature piece, the healthcare? So now this one is not directly related to MAID, but it's just like, remember that last week we had that piece about the dude where they're like, hey, if you would have fell asleep while you were waiting for the doctor, you would have died because it turns out you've been having a heart attack in the waiting room. So this is sort of along those same lines.
Yeah, it's Carnation Park, I think.
16 years old, a son, an older brother, and loyal friend. Finley Vandenberghen's life is now a collection of memories closely guarded by his parents.
I still hear his laughter. We do what we can to keep his memory alive, but we miss him so, so much.
In early February of 2024, a migraine kept Finley home from school, but his condition got worse.
He was crying out in pain a lot. He didn't know what was going on, but he knew it was not normal. So I drove as fast as I could.
Hazel took her son to Oakville-Trafalgar Memorial Hospital just outside of Toronto. She says he would not see a doctor for hours, despite telling the nurses Finley was not doing well.
When I went up at 3 in the morning, they said, well, we only have one doctor, but there's another one coming in at 4. I don't know where that one doctor was.
Finley was triaged at almost exactly 10 o'clock, and he wasn't actually seen by a physician until 6:22 in the morning.
According to the statement of claim about what happened that morning, the doctor said Finley was experiencing sepsis pneumonia with hypoxia, and he was at high risk for acute deterioration. His oxygen levels, which hospital records show had been dropping throughout the night, were a concern.
I remember just saying to Finley, like, Finley, we got to get, you know, we're looking at this screen that's got his oxygen saturation. I'm like, we have to get it up. And his breathing was so shallow by this point. And he said, I can't do deep breaths. It hurts too much. I said, you got to try.
Finley eventually needed to be intubated and also suffered a cardiac arrest. Finley was taken to SickKids Hospital in Toronto, but it was too late as he was then in hypotensive shock.
We had to make the decision to take Finley off life support.
Or risk that the situation would escalate even more and he would wake up and die in a lot of pain.
After Finley died, hospital staff did meet with the family to review what happened. In a written statement, officials said, like many hospitals, we are seeing more patients presenting with increasingly complex health conditions and comorbidities.
Weird.
How can be? Why, what? They're actually admitting this? They're seeing more with more increasing.
They're not saying why.
Wow, what?
Neither are we.
No, we're not saying it either.
Morbidities. This places significant demand on our emergency departments, patient flow, bed availability, and the patient experience.
Good for
the family
business,
has then. Since launched a lawsuit alleging, in part, the healthcare team failed to monitor Finley, have appropriate protocols in place for his treatment, or inform the family of the true nature of his condition.
The experts are quite clear and unequivocal that this was a treatable condition, and had he been treated promptly, there is no doubt in my mind that he would still be here today. He was triaged as a second high.
You think that's worth the extra $6,000 a year on average that the U.S. citizen puts toward healthcare?
Dude, I'm telling you, I've got a personal story that's almost identical to this. 22-year-old goes to the hospital. It's like, can't. I think it was his breathing or was super weak, like liver. They thought it was his liver or kidneys or something like that. He was really, really sick. They did some tests and stuff like that, but they couldn't figure out exactly what it was. I guess they didn't do all the tests. So they sent him home eventually, and he was so sick that he couldn't take care of himself. So he called his mom. He's 22 years old, right? Just becoming a teacher. And his mom, I went to his mom's, and then like, a few days later, I don't know exactly how many days, but less than a week since he was diagnosed with whatever, they couldn't figure it out. He died in bed, like this 22-year-old. And they had to figure out on the autopsy, they figured out that it was some muscle wasting disease that and his muscle proteins or something like was leaching into his system. So I think it creates a sepsis similar type thing like this.
Same idea.
It seems very similar, the same idea. And then they were trying to sue the hospital too. They're thinking about suing him too, because they just sent him home. Like they basically said, well, we can't do anything else for you. Like, or they didn't line up the proper tests or whatever the thing was. And that's just going to happen more and more with these young people. I mean, this is a 16-year-old, right? And a 22-year-old. I mean, how crazy is that?
Seems crazy.
This level in triage, and the guidelines say that 95% of the time they should be seen within 15 minutes.
The hospital says they are making changes to track data more closely, refining their on-call coverage criteria protocols, and implementing other tools and working groups to improve patient flow and communication. The family wants more awareness so something like this never happens again.
I don't know. Pause it for a sec. I feel like they've got all the tracking they need in these. They track almost everything. They have like little clocks on in the ERs, how long your wait is, this and that. I mean, they've got all the systems in place. They just need to actually, well, I don't really want to speak to what they need to do. I don't know enough about it, but I just feel like their logistical systems are in place already. Like that seems like an excuse to me.
Yeah, I agree. Let's jump over to this one here. This is Mario.
Plus, are they asking the right questions even? Like, was he ever asked that question by the doctor? Did they even say, was he?
I don't think it would have been in the last 9 seconds of the clip, though. This is over at Mario for the North on X. Dear unemployed Ontarians, Doug Ford is bypassing the federal government. He's issuing 100,000 asylum seekers work permits. They get free health care, free hotel stays, and free food. And now they're taking your job. He just flooded Ontario with cheap.
Bypassing the federal government. My unemployed friends in Ontario, Doug Ford is bypassing the federal government. He's issuing work permits to 100,000 asylum seekers. They get free health care, free hotel stays, and free food. And now they're taking your jobs. He single-handedly just flooded Ontario with cheap labor. Watch this.
I have a tremendous amount of asylum seekers that are up in Etobicoke and in the hotels. They're healthy. They're willing to work. They're hardworking people, but they're waiting over 2 years. And they're just sucking off the system nonstop. Not their fault.
The Liberals betrayed you.
There you have it, right from the horse's mouth, right?
Sucking off the system.
Say that little bit again.
Not their fault. And they're just sucking off the system 2 years. And they're just sucking off the system. And they're just sucking off the system. And they're just sucking off the system nonstop. Not their fault.
The Liberals betrayed you. They allowed a ridiculous amount of asylum seekers in our country. We can't afford it. We pay the bill. This is primarily a result of liberal failed immigration policies. It hurts our housing, it hurts our ability to find jobs, and it takes tax dollars, our tax dollars, away from us. And now Doug Ford just gave him the keys to our jobs. If you're in Ontario, I encourage you, do a Google search for your local member of provincial parliament. Email them your thoughts and how you feel about this. Whether you're employed or not, I can almost guarantee you know someone who's unemployed that would not appreciate this. Canada can no longer afford the world's problems. We have way too many of our own to deal with.
Yeah, like Paulenchenko says in the chats, but when this was being foretold 1 year ago, it was a conspiracy theory. I mean, even more than 1 year ago. I mean, a few years ago. I mean, I remember talk about, you know, the West taking in millions and millions of refugees like a decade ago or more. And it's happening all over the West, and it can't be coincidence. It's like they've just done it differently, right? Canada is being handled differently than the States, different than the UK, different than Europe. But how can it be anything but an intentional collapse? Like, really, it just feels like we're being destroyed purposefully. You know, I saw a great post that was about equity equals bringing the West down to third world. And instead of bringing the third world up, they're just bringing the West down to a third world. Like, they're bringing us all to the lowest possible level they can.
There you have it.
Would you agree?
Well, it's hard to argue.
And it's the two-tier system too. So let me share some of that with you too. I mean, it's the two-tier system that we have here. I'm going to read this thing from, this is from Trish Wood, right? So this is talking about the convoy, this is the other thing that's been super disappointing and super polarizing, watching everybody on X argue about this, right? So she went to Ottawa. I'm just going to read the first few paragraphs about this because the Crown Court was pushing for Tamara Litch to get 7 years and Chris Barber, I think, is that the name? 8 years. And here's just a few awesome paragraphs written by Trish here. Back home this morning after a difficult trip to Ottawa. Like, it started out good too. The arguments were great at the start. And then I think Trish will probably explain what happened here. The full force of the state was brought to bear on the convoy, and Tamara and Chris in a series of connected courtroom scenes that felt like a Kafka novel. The Crown and Justice Perkins McVeigh will be from this moment forward forever known. I'm just going to increase the zoom on this so I can read it right from that screen there. Forever known for lowering the status of well-meaning and brave human beings into nothing more than blank vessels to be punished and scolded for violating the rules. There are times when they sound like chirpy hall monitors passing judgment on the cool kids. No disrespect intended. Oh no, the protest wasn't violent, they admit. And yes, Tamara and Chris implored the protesters to behave, which they did. But according to the judge and the Crown, that really wasn't the issue. The protest was just too big, lasted too long, and at times was too loud. It was what they are calling a mass mischief. A new kind of criminal mischief that punishes peaceful protests for being too good, attracting too many people and raising too much money. It was just too successful. Tamara and Chris performed a kind of miracle in front of the whole country, smashing the stereotype of the working class thug, the racist deplorable, the leering sexual assaulter. The only group in Canada we are encouraged to hate and smear showed the country and the world how to behave. And they did it at a time when we all needed to see it and to know it. They allowed us to take ourselves back from the crushing weight of the privileged managerial state that was destroying everything we held dear. No shots were fired, no punches thrown. It was a perfect show of civil disobedience from the men and women our government had been telling us to hate. I believe that was the real crime. The Freedom Convoy showed them day after day for nearly 3 weeks that our working class people, the people who farm our fields, fight our wars, and yes, deliver our goods, are the real Canadians. I mean, pretty well said, eh? And they're going to throw the book at them. I mean, it's crazy when you see what's happening.
You think they will?
Well, yeah, they're trying to, they're sticking to their 7 to 8 year, I think, their guns there. I mean, this is going to be almost as much as you can ever get for mischief. Meanwhile, there's violent criminals getting out. It's disgusting.
Well, I guess Friday, when's the sentencing in September, October, right?
I don't know, to be honest.
I think,
Paul, what's that?
I mean, so far they've lost them all. So far the government has lost them all. I don't see why this would be any different. You know what I mean?
Because you know why? She didn't even know that the bank accounts were frozen. I mean, this is the bubble they're living in, right? They didn't even know what happened. How can the judge that's judging on this, on these two, not even have a full picture of what happened?
Yeah.
Like she was surprised at it. Like she's just in this fucking the Laurentian elite bubble.
You think we get another convoy if it happened? If they toss
it? No, I don't think so. I think we're past it. Yeah. Polochenko says again, it is cheaper to bring the first world. I think he means here to the third world. First world down to the third world, than the third world to the first. There are too many people involved in the game. Not everybody will be allowed to win. Yeah, I agree. Mass malevolent misbehavior and mischief. Sounds like a good time. Oh, that should have been the title. Thanks, Cody.
Mass mischief. I mean, that's...
And that's not even the grab bag of grievances. I mean, do you want to get into the grab bag of grievances? Or
well, Let's do it.
All right.
So you can take it over.
This is a follow-up from last week when we talked about the whole Diagonal thing and the what was it again? Second Sons and all that stuff, right? So here's Wiretap Media again. I'm going to play a clip, and before I read his post. So,
Stéphane Lamont-Langlois.
Why are you following this guy? I mean, he must just enrage you. Or is he pretty good?
No, he's pretty good. Yeah, Wiretap's good, I think. I mean, this is going to enrage you.
Stéphane Lamont-Langlois is a professor of criminology who specializes in extremism. He says that while...
specializes in extremism. So this is the CBC here, the National.
While the overall number of extremists in the military may be small, their weapons training can make their radicalization more dangerous.
The extreme rights group, they know this. And this is why they want to get in, or they want to recruit people who have this experience.
Since the pandemic, both active and former military members have become more vocal in expressing anti-government opinions. A number of serving members.
No kidding, eh? Since the pandemic, we've been more vocal about expressing anti-government opinions. No shit. Like.
Took part in the 2022 convoy protests. And CSIS has been monitoring Diagonal, a group started by a veteran turned online influencer and which advocates for a civil war to create a white ethno state.
What we've seen is more.
So you think he advocates for a civil war? Come on. Unbelievable.
More what I call networked individuals coming to the movements.
Barbara Perry is a professor at Ontario Tech University and one of Canada's best known experts on hate groups. She says in recent years, extremists have been less interested in joining established groups and instead orient themselves around a grab bag of grievances.
So engaging, especially in those online.
Did you catch that, eh? Forget the groups. It's just. Orient yourself around a grab bag of grievances. Yeah, that's kind of what we're doing here in the A-list, because you're giving us too many easy grab bag grievances to go after here.
Groups, and instead orient themselves around a grab bag of grievances.
Free speech was on the signs.
What's that?
Free speech was on the sign. Those bastards.
Especially in those online spaces and consuming and adopting some of the narratives that they are being exposed to. Framing, if you will.
Let me guess, conspiracy theories?
Their own grievances within the context of those conspiracy theories and ideologies. So I think we've seen an uptick in individuals engaging with the movement more so than the growth of groups.
So... It's infuriating. According to the CBC, since the pandemic, CAF, Canadian Air Force veterans, have become more extreme. And those who express a distaste for government corruption are more dangerous because of their weapons training. So, and of course, they're citing this Diagonal as an example. But I'm here for the comments, really. This is a good one for the comments. People just letting them have it. The million plus pages of evidence already found of CAF misfeasance supports veterans' distaste for the government. And in the debacle of Afghanistan withdrawal, veterans have every reason to be critical. And this is Tom Morazzo. Here's one of the lawyers from the convoy. I find her reprehensible, and her claims have not stood up to scrutiny in the 2.5 years I've known about her. Terrible person. Mrs. Scott says, military is the only way to clean up mass immigration and government corruption. Some of you are sitting at tables that need flipping. Perhaps Diagolon is our remnant. Perhaps they have discernment. And then Maggie says, perhaps the veterans are tired of seeing soy boys and crazy women drive the country into the ground. Banjo Pilled says, if vets are pissed, they have good reason. Patriotism has been abandoned in favor of Marxism. Learn to self-censor and comply, disregarding any moral compass. They want mercenaries, not ethical warriors, proof being the illegal mandates. So you must be kidding us with this nonsense. Again, this is from Matt Joe. Pro-Hamas, pro-Palestine, and anti-Israel protests have been mentioned in the House of Commons fewer than 15 times, despite over 400 individual protests and a taxpayer cost of over $35 million. Diagolon was mentioned 20 times in the House, despite confirmation they were not considered an organized entity or a credible threat because white man bad. I thought there was another. So this is where my highlighting thing didn't work. I predict and CSIS agrees that we're going to have a lot of civil unrest in Canada by the end of the year. Things are going to get so bad, many people have nothing less to lose and take to the streets. PM Carney's word salad will change nothing as Trump's tariffs destroy all. Here's a good one. Todd Watson says, can you provide more info on how to join this white ethno state or setting up one? Thanks. This is the one I wanted to get to. So that is how they will come for me. This is Mickey 66. Alberta separatist, single white male, not married, no kids yet, combat engineer, make things go boom. I am what you would call the poster boy for a bad white guy. Barbara Perry is a lying piece of you-know-what when I brought up the fact that open communists are in the CAF and ignored, she specified she did not want to talk about that. No matter what, whites will be promoted as the enemy and need to be stomped out. White racism is promoted in schools and governments. Whites are not allowed to be alone together anymore either, but everyone else is. That's interesting. So that's what you're going to see, a clampdown of whites gathering together. We are the most abused class, and half of it comes from our own. And then here, I wanted to talk to you about this, Darren. Does this sound like the definition of our government right now? Anarcho-tyranny is a concept describing a system where the state fails to enforce laws against serious crimes or disorder, anarchy, while simultaneously imposing excessive control or punishment on minor infractions or law-abiding citizens, tyranny. It suggests a paradoxical governance model where authorities selectively enforce laws to maintain power, often targeting the compliant while neglecting rampant criminality. The term is often associated with political theorist Samuel T. Francis, who used it to critique perceived failures in modern governance. That's pretty good.
That is pretty good. Why is Kamala Harris trending?
Where's that?
It was down a bit. Go down. Down right there.
President Trump stuns America by calling for Kamala Harris to be prosecuted. She's not above the law. I voted for this. That's yesterday. 2 hours ago, Kamala Harris expected to pick Elizabeth Warren as her VP. No, come on. 2028, is that why it's going?
Interesting.
Why is she? I mean, it doesn't seem like. Maybe if I go to latest, 3 minutes ago, Kamala Harris, when asked if there's any which way the government controls men's bodies the way it controls women's bodies, he's now sitting on the court, but he shouldn't be allowed to ask questions. And he's what?
All right, this is a train wreck. Let's get back.
Well, yeah, I mean, you just like
I sidelined the show.
I guess he's 36 seconds ago. I guess he's Trump is demanding her arrest.
What does he say? I'm looking, go back up.
Okay. I'm looking at the large amount of money owed by the Democrats after the presidential election and the fact that they admit to paying, probably illegally, $11 million to singer Beyonce for an endorsement. She never sang, not one note, and left the stage to a booing and angry audience. $3 million for expenses to Oprah, $600,000 to very low-rated TV anchor Al Sharpton, a total lightweight, and others to be named for doing absolutely nothing. These ridiculous fees were incorrectly stated in the books and records. You are not allowed to pay for an endorsement. It is totally illegal to do so. Can you imagine what would happen if politicians started paying for people to endorse them? All hell would break out. Kamala and all of those that received endorsement money broke the law. They should all be prosecuted. Thank you for your attention to this matter. It's going to get weird because, I mean, they were doing everything they could to. This is the problem, right? They won't be, the Republicans won't be as bad to the Democrats as they were to them. They were trying to do everything they could to jail Trump. And will he do it back? Let's see. We'll see. I don't know. It's going to be interesting.
She'll be interesting. What else you got?
Well, I mean, I got some other stuff, but I could save, I'll save the big ones for next week. I'll just go through some small stuff because you're out, right?
I'm out.
Because TikTok apparently likes Canadian politics, what's going on with this, Darren? Everyone on TT is freaking out that TT will go away in September and you'll only have access to the new M2 app, United States people.
What's TT? TikTok?
I guess. That's it. That's access to like 70 to 100 million people. You need more. Maybe we weren't meant to connect the entire world. You don't know?
I'm assuming it's TikTok.
So, and this must be, I thought it was a Canadian thing.
No, that can't be to us.
All right. Well, the other thing I wanted to share was this. This is from the Blonde Bigot. If you're Canadian and I don't know if you want to talk, I mean, this, I was going to try to save this for a bigger segment, but I don't know if you've heard about this, but I do think it's one of those sort of hidden phenomena that's kind of happening. If you're a Canadian and you sell your business to an Indian, you should have to leave them with the, when the time comes. What? You should have to leave, what? Leave with them? When? Okay, I don't understand what she's saying, but this is a reply here, Rabbit Justice here. It's happening rapidly and in a scope that no one knows about. Canadians and their children are being left out of the greatest transfer of wealth in human history. This kind of goes back to what we were talking about in the chats there with Poroshenko and the leveling out here. I run a professional services firm and we deal with small businesses. Look at the local business register for the last year. I would say 97% of business sales have been to Indian sounding names. Everything. Pharmacies, tutoring companies, coffee shops. Literally every business you can think of. Almost always it involves termination of all Canadian staff and replacing with Indians. These guys pay them under the table, don't do their CPP and EI, play stupid all the time about GST, PST, and they are almost always involved in something illegal like smuggling. Imagine leaving that kind of legacy when you sell your business. Typical F you got mine boomer behavior. You had me until boomer. Yeah. It's the generation selling the businesses, unfortunately. Younger generations don't own anything. So maybe it's in reply. Should I play this clip here about
sure, why not? Let's see what happens. Let's
play this here.
Why is every Tim Hortons seemingly staffed with temporary foreign workers? Like, aren't there Canadians that need jobs too? Now, I don't think temporary foreign workers are a bad thing. I just am perplexed as to why every single Tim Hortons is staffed with them. Now, there is the temporary foreign worker program where employers have to prove to the government through a labor market impact assessment that no Canadian is not only applying for the job, no Canadian is qualified for the job, forcing the employer to go outside of Canada. Typically, this was used in agriculture and construction. But over the years, the Temporary Foreign Worker Program has expanded to all types of different sectors, and something critical happened in 2014. In 2014, the government introduced the International Mobility Program, or IMP. It was tied to special work permits, post-grad permits, etc. But a key element of IMP is no labor market impact assessment is required. Employers no longer have to prove that Canadians were passed over for the job. By 2022, IMP permit holders ballooned to 472,000, more than triple the number of temporary foreign workers under the Temporary Foreign Worker Program. It got me thinking, we have more International Mobility Program permit holders than ever before. We have more temporary foreign workers than ever before. Employers don't need to show how Canadians were passed up on these jobs. So building this two-tier system.
So to be fair, I believe that it was 2014 when that law changed, wasn't it? When did it
change? Yeah, but it was 2022 when it ballooned, right?
Yes. Is that when the law changed then? I'm going to find out. I see if I find out.
Where we have Canadians who are struggling to find jobs and trying to make their ends meet. But then we also have this cheap, exploitative form of labor that's a pipeline that's growing dramatically year after year after year. What does this mean for our country? And as I've said before, social cohesion moving forward.
Well, did he even talk about the fact that government's paying for that, those employers? They're subsidizing the actual wages. I mean, that's why the corporations are actually doing it now. If they had to pay the regular rate, they wouldn't be doing it so easy. Right?
Exactly. I'm just trying to pull up some stuff here now.
I was talking with a friend. While you pull this up, I'll just read some of these comments. I was talking with a friend the other day about this. She knows someone that sold their store and gas station to some Jeets. They would bring in bags of cash and launder it through the business. She stayed on for a bit once she sold it to help with the transition and witness this. Well, yeah, I mean, that's going to happen.
Why?
What is this?
It's the government's fault, not the boomers. If the kids don't want to run dad's restaurant, who the fuck else can he sell it to? Got to be more specific and call them boomer liberals or boomer socialists. My relatives on one side of the family are mostly 65 plus and have absolutely hated the last 10 years. Yeah, good point. The LIMA program, the LMIA, that's the one. It was supposed to be for employers who cannot find local people. My question is, where did all these fast food restaurants get the staff they had before LIMA? Yeah.
So it looks like, what is this? This is navaimmigration.ca. Come on, this page won't load. Let's get going. In 2024, the Canadian government made significant changes to LIMA-exempt work permits. Those changes were Mexicans no longer TRV-exempt, removal of blah, 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 new work permit, end of temporary public policy to exempt certain visitors in Canada from immigration requirements during the COVID-19 pandemic. That's a big one. That's about it. I can't find the one, but so maybe it was more recent then, because it says in December 2022, major LMIA exemption code updates were implemented. This included additional under international agreements and public policy categories.
Yeah, that's it.
That's yeah, but one. I can't find one that just sort of tells me what it says.
Well, it changed it so that remember it used to be like where you'd have to be like in construction or and then it opened it up to all these other different industries.
Yeah. LIMA exemptions, what are they? Why they exist? Why trade agreements matter? Typical eligibility criteria for exempt work permits, proof of citizenship or residency. You have to have a job offer. Occupational criteria, a demonstrable benefit and compliance with immigration. Here we go. So here's a comprehensive LMI exemptions table. Inside Canada, Hong Kong, outside Canada, Hong Kong. These are also SUSMA professionals, SUSMA investors, SUSMA traders. from the UK Independent Prose. I can't really find it to break down. It's kind of a little more complicated than I expected.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Okay, well, maybe we'll do that for next time or something, or we can read.
Hey, thanks, Cody.
Again. Yeah, thanks, Cody. Awesome. So I should, I mean, I was going to say I'll save the rest of the stuff for next week. I got a Candace Malcolm deconstruction of CBC, which is just a great example of why we have to be careful of all these CBC and CTV stories and headlines. But here's one that we should share right now, the great debanking of Canadian lawyers. So did you hear about this?
I did.
Yeah.
This. It's troubling, to say the least. This
is from Lawyer Lisa. We're going to get her on the show at some point on our Outlawed show, maybe, or maybe this one. I don't know how we'll do it. But for the resistance has begun, officers of the court, you must decide. So here's a letter from Eva Chipiuk. She was one of the lawyers from the convoy. Received July 17, 2025. She shared it on her LinkedIn profile. RBC is debanking a Canadian hero. Eva is now outside client risk appetite. So this is just from like 10 days ago. I don't want to read this whole letter here, but basically saying that after careful consideration, we regretfully advise you that the recent activity in your accounts is outside of RBC's client risk appetite. And consequently, we are no longer in a position to continue our banking relationship with you.
So what do they do with the money?
And here she is cross-examining. Well, no, I don't think they're not going to just, they're not like taking away her money. I think they're just saying you have until, let's see, I think they gave her a date, August 18th. We recognize that you'll need to seek an alternative institution to support your banking needs and ask that you do so no later than August 18th. So they're basically, they're terminating her account so she can clean it all up by August 18th. So here she is talking to Justin Trudeau. This is her final question I clipped.
What a complete proposal.
My last question, Mr. Prime Minister, when did you and your government start to become so afraid of your own citizens?
That's a very
unfair. I am not, and we are not.
Good. That'll teach you to question JT like that. Get your bank accounts taken away.
Yeah,
here she is cross-examining former PM Trudeau in the Public Order Commission. The POC came out of the Emergency Act, which debanked Canadians. See, that's it. Didn't just like I would say this is debanking. Those were frozen. The bank accounts. Is that what happened? Frozen bank accounts, right?
Frozen. Yes.
Yeah. So Canadians
didn't get a heads up that you weren't going to get your money. Yeah. They just took it.
For donating to the convoy. I have spoken around the world with the lawyers conducting civil liberty litigation. They are persecuted in a systematized fashion. As I described in my book, they are coming for the lawyers who do or would bring the cases to challenge their authority. Yeah, we'll look at that in more detail, but that's kind of scary, man. That's, you know, time to get your money out of these institutions. Hopefully the local credit unions are not as bad.
Time will tell. Time will tell. Well, anything else?
I think that's it. I'll save the rest for next time.
That's good time. And I think my dinner is ready. So we hope you guys enjoyed it. Of course, if you're listening or watching on YouTube or Rumble, wherever you're doing, like, share, subscribe, comment, do all that good stuff to help us out with the algo. You can head to a-list.ca. And get this in podcast form, and you can support the show there. So do all that stuff. Check out grandamerica.ca for the podcast. Contact at thecabin.com for trips and events. grandamericaoutlaw.ca for conspiracy content. adultbrain.ca for audiobooks and all that sort of fun stuff. And bigskytallow.ca for tallow and that sort of stuff. And I think that's about it. Check out my new
book. Talk about your book, yeah.
Unlearned, Why School Failed You. And what to do about it has seems to be quite popular so far. Everyone that has read it has had some pretty good reviews. So
it's on audio too. So
I haven't seen any of those reviews make it over to any of the platforms yet, but hopefully they're coming through. So check all that stuff out. It's real short and easy too. And you can even get it for free on YouTube and all those sorts of places. So thanks for listening, guys. Keep spreading the word. Thanks for the support. We love you. Thanks for listening. And we will see you next week.
Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never political anyhow. Since when did you start trusting in the government? Since when was it okay to ridicule and shame your neighbor? Your opinions have become, your opinions have become as fickle as artificial flavors. What matters most to you? What the TV host told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north? Oh, true. Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never religious anyhow. Since when did you kiss the ring on the hand of the Pope? Since when do we need pharmaceuticals to cope? Your soul has become, ever-loving soul has become as brittle as communion wafers. What matters most to you? What the Holy Ghost told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north? Oh, true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. Bureaucrats think I'm non-essential anyhow. Since when has our culture become so lowbrow? It's all touchscreens, and nobody has any know-how. Your idea of fun is taking 1,001 photos of your duck face. Matters most to you what the celebrity's post told you was cool, or a moral compass that points true north? Oh, true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. I'm gonna kill your 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 sacred cow. I'm gonna kill I'm gonna kill your sacred cow. I'm gonna kill your sacred cow.